All right, we've got a compilation. I can't help it. I'm like, we're not going to show the left blowing up and melting down. But these are victims, but we are going to show how dangerous and crazy they are coming up. And then all these other clips, and then General Flynn at the bottom of the hour. Roger Stone's meeting with Trump right now, so he should be joining us after that. Or if not, he's going to give you the update with Owen. So that could be coming after her press conference at 3 or her speech. I think it'll be a speech where she capitulates. She didn't do it last night, but I think they know it looks really bad, so she is. But Owen, you've got the next 5 minutes. Host this segment and finish up with your views on how we fix this and what's coming next.
All right, so I'm looking at some of these races, and I'm just thinking to myself, what went wrong for the Republicans? Did they not put enough money? Did they not put enough focus? Why did Trump do better in some of these areas than the House candidates, like in a northern Ohio or in an Alabama or in some of these other seats that the Democrats were able to flip, even in New York? Iowa, maybe you can understand with Des Moines there, but it looks like they will hold on to that seat. We'll have to keep an eye on that, folks. I mean, one dump of mail-in ballots tomorrow at midnight can flip that to the Democrats. So we're really going to need to watch that Iowa District 1 and this Maryland district over here, too, that is literally 50-50 split. I mean, it's almost impossible to even believe that these numbers are possible. It looks like we've even, so there it is. I mean, we're talking about just a couple hundred votes separating these two candidates. And again, these are districts that Republicans really should be winning. And you just have to wonder, why was Trump able to perform better in these areas than these House candidates? It would really be a shame if the Republicans don't take the House. And it would be really an upset, I would say. It would be an anomaly, and it would be an upset that certainly needs to be looked into. Now, if it has something to do with voter fraud, I hope the Republican Party is on it, but it's a lot harder to track and trace that stuff and it's in the House races, and it's normally not as bad in your House races. I mean, once you get outside of the big cities, it's usually easier to deal with this stuff and mitigate some of the fraud. But, I mean, even here in Montana, I mean, you do pretty well here in Montana, but you should be getting similar victories, I would say, in northern Ohio and in Alabama in these areas that you lost. I mean, so I think something needs to be looked into for the Republicans to figure out what went wrong in these areas. But the House is on the balance. I mean, it is hanging by a thread right now for the Republicans. And I just hope that the RNC is watching these races closely. Now, here's the big story. If we have the presidential map, we should pull that up. It looks like when this is all said and done, you're going to have, I mean, basically you already have the same result from 2016. This is virtually what we have on the map, the same result as the 2016 presidential election. And when you look at the votes, Trump, it looks like, is either going to get about the same amount of votes or even less than he got in 2016. Harris is on pace to get maybe 10 or more million less votes than Joe Biden. And so you already have big Democrats at the DNC, Hillary campaign staffers and all these other people, former staffers, they're all saying, oh, something's wrong here. What happened to the Harris votes? They haven't decided how to approach this yet. They don't know how. Are they going to blame Russia? Are they going to claim a stolen election? They don't really know how to approach this yet because they are the ones that have been saying, oh, it's a conspiracy. There are no stolen elections. So I don't know what they're going to do here, but this is your big elephant in the room right here, ladies and gentlemen. That's your big elephant in the room, and it's either one of two things. Either it's the total proof that it was voter fraud that got Joe Biden in, or the Democrats have to look themselves in the eye and say, was Kamala Harris really that bad of a candidate? Why did we go with her instead of Joe Biden? And why did we all jump on board for the worst ticket in the history of a presidential race? And the results here...
A new extremely important product is now available exclusively at the alexjonesstore.com, Ultimate Probiotic. This is a private label, but even made stronger, of one of the top, highly recommended, highly rated brands out there today. And it's more than just a probiotic. It's got a whole bunch of known natural ingredients
that boost your overall gut health and that detoxify and that helps flush out all the garbage in your body. Ladies and gentlemen, with all the attacks on our bodies, you have to understand that the gut is the front line. And if you don't have a strong gut, it's like not having a front door on your house or an engine in your car. The gut is so important. Probiotics are amazing and are documented for their great effects. Get this high-quality probiotic right now, Ultimate Probiotic, 60 billion, at thealexjonesstore.com. And I want to thank you for your support. Now take action at thealexjonesstore.com. And again, I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
All right, I've got a ton of really interesting, informative video clips that I haven't gotten to, so I want to start going to those. But these first clips I played in the second hour, the beginning of it, I want to play those again. I just want to go to all of these because it paints a picture of what I already know they're up to, that you know what they're up to, but it's just them basically in between promising to come after everybody and we're not done yet, the deep state's going to get you. Play Chris Hayes first. Haven't played that yet. And then I want to show other globalists being very honest. This is not Trump's party. This is Trump's country. Well, it's the American people's country. We're taking it back. CNN trying to cope with the Trump win. Jake Tapper, Anderson Cooper. This is the greatest comeback in history. CNN, Scott Jennings. This is revenge of the working class American. Then we've got other leftists saying, no, everyone's really just racist. The Hispanics and blacks are now racist against themselves. It's just wild. But here is Chris Hayes first.
The House, we're not going to know for weeks, but it's possible that Donald Trump and the Republicans will have a trifecta as they did in 2016, mm-hmm. in which case the bulwark, against whatever overreach there could be and whatever those depredations might be, and I think they're going to have a tendency to overreach if they do, is the kind of thing that's democracy between elections, which is the work of civil society. It's the work of the Fourth Estate. It's the work of institutions. It's the work of citizens. All that super important stuff. We've seen it before.
And, you know, this is his party. This is these voters.
It's not just his party.
Him. What?
It's not just his party now. And that's,
no, it's his country.
I mean, we have to be careful. We haven't called it yet, but Pennsylvania makes it extremely tough for Kamala Harris. And that's one of the things, I mean, the Trump side.
And Anderson, it is hard to think of a political comeback that is actually more significant than this one. I'm tempted to say Richard Nixon, but that really falls short of what Donald Trump has achieved.
Yeah, I mean, winning not just the electoral votes, but the popular vote as well.
This is a mandate. He's won the national popular vote for a Republican for the first time since 2004. This is a big deal. This isn't backing into the office. This is a mandate to do what you said you were going to do. Get the economy working again for regular working class Americans. Fix immigration. Try to get crime under control. Try to reduce the chaos in the world. This is a mandate from the American people to do that. I think I'm interpreting the results tonight as the revenge of just the regular old working class American, the anonymous American who has been crushed, insulted, condescended to. They're not garbage. They're not Nazis. They're just regular people who get up and go to work every day and are trying to make a better life for their kids. And they feel like they have been told to just shut up when they have complained about the things that are hurting them in their own lives. I also feel like this election, as we sit here and pore over this tonight, is something of an indictment of the political information complex. I mean, we've been sitting around here for the last couple of weeks, and the story that was portrayed was not true. I mean, we were told Puerto Rico was going to change the election. Liz Cheney, Nikki Haley voters, women lying to their husbands. Before that, it was Tim Walz in the camo hats. Night after night after night, We were told all these things and gimmicks were going to somehow push Harris over the line. And we were just ignoring the fundamentals. Inflation, people feeling like that they were barely able to tread water at best. That was the fundamentals of the election. And so I think that both parties should always look at the results of an election and figure out what went right and what went wrong. But I think for all of us who cover elections and talk about elections and do this on a day-to-day basis, we have to figure out how to understand, talk to, and listen to the half of the country that rose up tonight and said, we've had enough.
And they're speechless. Now, here's the big question. If Trump doesn't get the House, and then it's always the same. They keep it open for days or weeks, and they get whatever ballots they need so that they get the House. And it's the fraud. But people are so awake to it, and now the process of exposing it and the eyes on it and the money being spent to fight it is we're going in the right direction. So as negative as this is, at least we're in the fight now and not asleep. So that's good, and that's the beginning of end of them. But here's Chris Wallace again, draining the energy from the CNN studio, announcing Trump may soon have the chance to reshape the U.S. government. Well, yeah, that's what this is all about. Here it is.
I mean, let's talk about the significance of a Republican Senate if, and I repeat, if Donald Trump is elected president. It means that they can confirm without any Democratic votes any appointment he makes to his cabinet, to the government, to the Supreme Court, should there be a vacancy. It's an enormous advantage to a president. And at this point, we haven't talked about it much, but in the House, although that hasn't been decided yet, the Republicans have flipped three Democratic seats. The Democrats haven't flipped a single Republican seat. So there is the possibility here mm-hmm. of a complete united Republican government with Donald Trump as the president and with a Republican House and Senate, which means that in terms of appointments, in terms of immigration policy, economic policy, environmental policy, you yeah. name it, he could have a pretty blank check.
And now he does, partially, but not if he doesn't get the House, but the confirmation of the Senate is big. Now, I want to play a clip here. NBC blamed Biden for Kamala losing because he dropped out too late. So she got less than 2% in polls, never stood at the primaries, was the most unpopular Democrat candidate I've ever heard of, who was, you know, in the debates. And the more they saw her, the more they hated her. So it would have been worse if he'd have dropped out a year ago. I mean, that's a no-brainer. So here they are not admitting to themselves what they really did. But on NBC, Jen Psaki was on there. NBC questions whether Democrat coup against Biden was right move as Harris election failed. So, yeah, absolutely. As horrible as Biden was, and he's a super creep. I mean, he's a 9.5 on a scale of 1 to 10. And Harris and Walz together are 100. I mean, it's not even an 11. It's like a joke. It's like hell opened up. And I mean, they're so freakish and fake and disgusting and reviled that it's like, and then her husband. And I mean, and then Walz's wife. I mean, where do you find these people? I mean, they are the most disingenuous, revolting people I've ever seen. And that's emblematic of the devil's people. It's just mind-blowing. Here's NBC blaming Biden.
Well, and that's what makes the timing, I think, of President Biden's decision to step down after the debate something that, if she does in fact lose, will be under a microscope, because, of course, there was so much discussion, even over the summer, about potentially having an open primary and having that fight play out within the Democratic Party. So I think it's one of the big questions moving forward.
And Jen, has the conversation begun yet about Joe Biden and about the decision to ask him to step aside?
It will begin. It will begin depending on the outcome. Sure. And obviously, there hasn't been a race called yet. If this is not a Harris win, that will certainly be part of the discussion. It is. She's run a campaign over the course of 107 days. That is not something we've seen in history. And there'll be lots of questions about exactly that, the timing and the impact of that.
Well, Chuck was bringing up the history. I mean, in terms of vice presidents trying to win the presidency with a unpopular president, he said it's bordering on politically impossible.
And this gets
their tyranny is out in the open. And that's a very positive thing. I mean, tyranny's not a good thing, but if you're going to have it, you might as well admit it's there and get rid of it. And admitting it's there is the first step, like admitting that the poison mRNA shots are not vaccines and are designed to erase your immune system and slowly kill you. And it's killed over 30 million people, according to global insurance actuaries. And Trump told Kennedy, RFK Jr., that he is going to release the government databases that are secret, but that we know are there. Because they're studying what the shots do, and that's come out. And the other governments do it as well. They're euthanizing the old people while mitigating and creating sterilants that don't sterilize everybody but lower fertility in everybody and destroy it in some depending on your genetics and your predisposition. So these people see us as cockroaches and they tell you there's too many of you and then they say they want to do it. And so my job would be so easy if people would just study what the globalists say. I mean, we played on Monday. Yuval Noah Harari came out. In fact, find that again, please. 40-second clip. And he's the high priest of the WEF. I mean, what he says is what they all say. You can watch their forums, and they all say it. The future's not human. People are bad. The elite are about to become gods. We need to swear allegiance to the world government. And he's like, you know, these nationalists, they just won't swear allegiance to their global government. And that's why, you know, humanity's doomed, while they shut down humanity. And then you got New York Times articles, Alex Jones is crazy. There's no such thing as the New World Order in the global government. No, they're just setting up the world currency and the NATO as the world army and world censorship bureaus and saying they want to use UN troops during the next lockdown. The head of the WHO, the Fauci's mini-me, the head of Alphabet, you know, controls Google and everything, Eric Schmidt, that played the clips. And he was at Stanford 2 months ago, and he's like, yeah, we need to use NATO and the UN to censor people during the next pandemic and, you know, maybe even arrest them. I know it's the State Department Memorandum 7277's public law, and I know they've always planned to disarm the people and the police and then bring in UN peacekeepers, but, even I would look at that from the 60s and say, okay, that is a U.S. law. That's still there. And the UN goes around and takes over countries all the time. But I'm like, really, UN troops? Says it's just UN policy we live under. And then our bureaucrats follow the UNESCO treaties. And Trump pulled out of most of those when he's about to do it again. And Musk is saying, just get out of it completely. I totally agree. And that's how far we've come. But imagine an unelected world government, the totalitarian nature of which is incredible, whose official UN small arms board, UNIDIR, look it up, for the year 2000, says they want to have an abolition of civilian firearm ownership, period. And they say any civilian ownership of firearms threatens the legitimate power monopoly of the state. That's a quote. I haven't shown that UNIDIR document in years. I'm sure somebody can find it. Guys, type in UNIDIR. That's a UN conference on blah, 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 small arms. I forget the exact what the acronym stands for, but it's the UN global body, and it puts it out, and then the member states say they'll adopt it because they're signatories via a treaty of that. Just like all those UN treaties, like UNESCO over education. You wonder why the education is the same in Australia, it's the same here, and same in Germany, teaching five-year-olds how to, you know, get blowjobs. It's the UN. And then the UN rules go to the ESG through the banks and BlackRock, and they tell corporations, you'll promote this, or you won't get a good corporate credit score. And then now they'll have your personal one that China already has, and then they'll punish you if you don't. So if you don't take your kid to be brainwashed by the pedo cult, you will be downgraded. If you own a car somehow, you'll be downgraded. This is admitted. I mean, Larry Fink said last year, we're going to control behavior with a global ESG and then implement it on the general public as a social credit score. And they're going to make everybody so poor that you'll be begging for the universal basic income. with all the strings that come attached with that. Yeah, there it is. Compliance and enforcement in WMD-related treaties. And then they call civilian firearms WMD. That's a UNIDIR, the United Nations Institute for Disarmament Research. And it runs the gamut from nuclear weapons to chemical weapons to howitzers to fighter jets to cruise missiles to, and then right down to your grandpa's shotgun. They got a bunch of documents, but let me tell you the exact words of the document. Just type in UNIDIR Convention. UNIDIR Convention. And just type in civilian ownership of firearms threatens the legitimate power monopoly of the state. And it's a resolution they passed to the full UN that passed and the Security Council signed off on as official UN policy. And if you're a signatory, you're supposed to do what they say, but we haven't done that. Everybody else did, to take your guns. I guess us in Switzerland haven't done it. So, I mean, the world government isn't coming. It's here. And that's 24 years ago. So, yeah, they want your guns. It's their official policy, and they want to own your body. And they're saying, oh, all those COVID camps we built? Well, when the next pandemic comes, we're going to lock you up for your speech. And then now New York's trying to pass a law to do it. And so is California. Do you get it yet? They're going to try to launch this takeover. They say at the UN for decades, we'll use a global pandemic to bring in the world government and the world ID. And then they've openly said, oh, yeah, COVID was a drill to do that. Now, I know most of you know that up one side and down the other, but this is real. And now we've got Elon Musk talking about it. We're close because what they're doing is totally illegal, absolutely tyrannical. They admit they're going to make everybody poor and sterilize us and make us eat bugs and we'll own nothing and be happy. BS. I mean, I am promoting the most common sense, decent proposals. And then they sit there and say, I'm a devil. Well, then look at what I support, what I'm pushing, what I'm exposing, and then ask yourself, do you want to support me or Klaus Schwab? You know, you're like, well, I'll just stay out of it. You're not going to stay out of it. They're coming for you. You already experienced they launched their pandemic operation. People go, how did Jones predict it exactly? Because it's in their documents. Operation Lockstep, the Rockefeller Foundation, John Hopkins, and the WHO. They tell you everything they're going to do. 2004, in the BioShield, federal law, was it $10 million? It's more than that, but it was like $6 billion, then $8 billion, then a bunch of packages to, quote, build bio research labs to stop bio attacks around the country. And they actually built more bioweapons labs under that. And then they built them over in Ukraine and everywhere else. And then they created millions of packages for FEMA. I think it was like, I forget how many millions. It was like 27 million or something. You look it up. Rodney Howard Brown actually still had one in his church he'd kept, thinking it was weird in 2004 when FEMA gave a bunch of the church. And it's a package, and it's got a mask and some gloves, and it tells them stay 6 feet apart and, wear your mask and don't leave your house. And they already had that on the shelf. And I remembered it, and then I was telling Brown about it. He goes, wait a minute, I got that. And then he goes and covers it on air. Notice they didn't launch the attack, though, in 2004. They launched it in 2020. So we're just sitting here waiting for them to launch the next attack. Are you going to just sit there and take that? And now we got Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be in the administration. They got a big problem. But we can't just hold them off. We've got to discredit them, defund them, and defeat them, because they are the global government that's trying to totally take over. They are the exterminists. They are the death cult. They are the bad guys. So, I mean, this is my life. I don't want to be locked down. I don't want to be bug proteins already being put in most of the processed food. I don't want my children growing up in this world. I don't want to have World War III. I mean, this is just self-preservation. This isn't a show. This isn't some genre of politics. There's a global corporate government that wants to depopulate the earth, that believes they're going to become superhumans, that are just out of their minds, wanting us to pledge allegiance to a world government that's in the official UN plans and congressional testimony in the 60s and 70s. Arthur Spangler testified in 1966 to the U.S. Senate and said everyone must take an allegiance to the UN and their world government or they'll have to be eliminated. That's basically the exact quote. These people aren't playing. Did you hear what I just said? Look up Arthur Spangler UN quotes. And back when I was learning all this, when I was, 18, 19 and really got into researching it, I would go to the UT library because I wasn't just going to believe the New American Magazine. And every damn thing they said was true. And I got the records. You've seen it in my films, film of the microfilm. I didn't just believe David Rockefeller said Mao Zedong's great. We need to live under that here in America. 1976, I went and got it at UT, put it in my movies. And I'm like, Mao Zedong is good? He killed 80 million of his own people? Here's a compilation. It's up on X. I suggest you share it at Alex Jones of the left completely flipping out with the Trump victory last night. Here it is.
How did we get here? How did we get here? What in the Alice in Wonderland nightmares is going on right now?
All I can say is how f***ing dare you.
If you voted for that man, if you voted for anybody other than Kamala and you live in one of the states that it was, close, or if you didn't vote, f*** you.
Senate race. It's not going to happen.
Go, Kamala.
I chose family. I chose women. I chose America. I love you.
How the f*** is this still happening? All I've ever known politically is hatred.
I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with you. I'm done with you and your mother and your sister. I'm just done with all of this.
I'm sorry. It's all my friends who are Trump supporters. You don't understand how scared of this man I am.
If this guy does end up winning again, all of the people who voted for him will be like happy and they'll just be celebrating. And everyone, we're scared for our lives. We're scared for our friends. How dare you put this man into office for another 4 years, knowing damn well what it means for our country, what it means for us as a people. To know that there is that much ignorance and that much hate in this country, it's so terrifying. It's so terrifying.
How the f*** are we back in this same situation again? Who the f*** is voting for him? Genuinely.
Policies. Live with that decision. Sit with it. Let it make you uncomfortable. F*** you.
They're coming after everybody. They're coming after Trump. They're coming after Kennedy. We need your support. And you don't even come here and do this.
Alex, first of all, I want to thank you. Give to Alex Jones. I don't want this guy to have to be like wearing a symbol and we're all going to say, the truth teller formerly known as Alex Jones. Let's not let that happen.
But, oh, they're trying to make an example out of me. I'm not that important, but I've become a rallying point. I've become like a Roman standard they want to capture. Explain that.
Look, I mean, if we don't have freedom of speech, if you don't have the First Amendment, if, media, which is, look, it never said only newspapers or the media. It was anyone that wants to challenge government, anyone that's willing to, put the feet to the fire of corporate interests of your government, that is supposed to be free.
Electronic soapbox.
In the end, if you lose to Alex, we all lose. We will all lose the ability to do tough stories, to take risks, to plant flags where we think there's an issue, sometime we'll get it wrong. I said before, you do a daily show. It's impossible to nail that to the wall. I do a weekly show. I spend more time vetting it. They're two different animals. They can't be compared to each
other. They also take stuff out of context and exaggerate.
Absolutely, that's true.
You know, one of the things that makes you so spectacular, Alex, is long before any of us were here, you were starting to talk about this deep state. You were talking about this, you know, a government that was supposed to be of, for, and by the people, that was being robbed from us by corporate interests, by special interests, by globalists, long before anybody else ever did. And to imagine you sitting here in this moment, we are in that impactful moment. And in many ways, not enough people are listening to you. And I want to say that, you know, I think the vaccine, and we've talked about this before, that was the tip of the spear of the final death blow, which was, if we can inject you and own your bodies and own the bodies of your children and pass laws that say that, you know, because of vaccinations, we've decided that we own your children. We make your decision.
That's a revolutionary takeover.
It was a revolutionary takeover. And so people like me got alarmed by that. And we joined forces with people like you that have been really talking about it for a long time. But I would say that we are at the very last stage. I was just speaking publicly, and this woman said, things don't happen that fast, Dale. You're being really dramatic. I don't think this election matters that much. I was like, that's because you're looking at this over the last year, maybe 2 years. There's people like Bobby that's been fighting the corporate establishment for 40 years as a lawyer, that watched his father when he was 13 years old be killed for exactly this battle.
And his
exactly
uncle.
This fight, and his uncle when he was 10 years old. So depending on what window you look at this, we're really at the end stage of a takeover and destruction of the one thing that stands in the way of globalist thinking, which is the Constitution of the United States of America.
They're doing all these lawsuits trying to take my name. People say they can't do that. Well, I got to defend those. We're going to win. We're already winning. The judge shut them down last week. That took high-powered lawyers and that, you know, 50 grand right there to have those briefs ready, okay? This is total war. We make it easy. Great supplements, great t-shirts, great everything. Go to the alexjonesstore.com. Become a VIP member. You get 40 bucks free a month. For 30 bucks, you make 10 bucks on that. It reminds you to go back to the store. Incredible supplements, the ultimate CMOS, superfood. It's all there at the Alex Jones Store. TheAlexJonesStore.com. My dad's great supplement company, drjonesnaturals.com. That's how we're funding this operation. Separate from InfoWars, you go there, you get t-shirts, you get ball caps, you spread the word, you meet like-minded people, you're a walking billboard for freedom, it's a great adventure, and you know you're funding our operation. We need funds, and I'll go on the offense and just hope the money comes in, but we're going on the offense. We caught them, we got the documents, I told you I'll sue the CIA and FBI. Get ready, first steps start this week, and the enemy already knows, so but I need money to do it. And look, I don't even think about my life or any of that. That doesn't matter. I'm on this mission. I love it. This is great. But I need funds to fight a war. TheAlexJonesStore.com, DrJonesNaturals.com. Those are the coordinates of the resistance. It's all there, and it's great products at great prices, highest quality, and it funds the fight against the New World Order that's coming down on us with both damn feet. But at least we're in the fight, and we're starting to win.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Waging war on corruption, it's Alex Jones.
General Michael Flynn, America's general, one of Trump's top advisors, and a man for the last 4 years that worked tirelessly across the country for voter integrity. Undoubtedly, if it wasn't for his work, we would not have had this victory last night. And he is the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, former top national security advisor, one of the most respected generals in modern history. And he can give you the 35,000-foot view right down to the one-inch breakdown of what we're facing. And he's one of the few voices, and that's not a good thing. It's prominent. It's a lot of little folks out there that are great, that are understanding we just won the biggest battle against the globalist in history and the biggest comeback in history. And they are off balance. They are desperate right now, but they are going to strike back. And I played clips earlier of different globalist pundits saying, oh, don't worry, the deep state will get him. So we've got to protect the president. We've got to get him in. We got to get good people in, and we've got to go on the offense against the bad guys. We've also got to turn the economy back on. We've got a tall order here, but we can do it. But I want to explain. We have to, as he said last night, we have to fight through the objective or press the attack. Okay? If we let up now, we'll be right back where we were when his first term, and they will overwhelm us. We have to go on offense. To explain that is General Flynn. General, thank you so much. You came on three times yesterday. I know you didn't get any sleep like I did, but I can see you're back at home. I'm going to try to give you the floor for the 25 minutes we have left. Sir, thank you so much.
Yeah, so Alex, appreciate it. And I put something out this morning on my ex post about fighting through the objective. And I gave an analogy of sort of the Normandy beach invasion, right? The European invasion of World War II, where, you know, it was D-Day, the D-Day invasion, very famous, right? And I say we're at D-Day plus one right now. We have not achieved victory over Europe yet. And the metaphor or the analogy is where what we're really facing is still an uncertain path ahead. We know who our leader is. We know what our formations are. We know what our resources are. We've sort of gathered our troops. We fought through this major D-Day invasion. We got the beachhead. You know, we won a massive, massive monumental victory. Without this victory that we got last night, over the last, you know, 24 hours, let's say, we could not now stand back up and begin to move forward, right? And to achieve an even greater victory. And that's what I mean by fighting through the objective. So we can't just, you know, take a pause and everybody, you know, high five. You know, what I'm telling people is get some rest, you know, maybe take a day. And for those that are going to continue in this fight, and I know that there are a few of the big influencers out there, I call them, you know, the world of digital soldiers, right? I mean, this is a big, big battle. It's a big battle for information. And I think information dominance. And we won. We won that initial battle. It is a major victory. But going forward, one of the things that we always talk about with, in the military, and from my perspective, we always say the enemy has a vote. The enemy has a vote. So what does that mean? What that means is that the powers that we're up against, the globalists, the establishment is that swirl that operates inside of D.C. that is really politically aligned. And then you have the bureaucracy, and then you have the various institutions that are infiltrated by, in many cases, by the CCP, Chinese Communist Party. And then you have all of the other domestic challenges that we face, the illegal invasion, the drugs on the street, you know, rise of fentanyl, rise of crime, the border invasion, all these other aspects. So they still have, you know, I mentioned this, I think, last night. I mentioned the idea of branches and sequels. A branch is a slight diversion off of your current plan. So if I'm on their team and I'm planning to counter this victory that we just lost, right? I mean, I'm looking at it from their standpoint. So I might have some diversions that I put into place. Or a sequel, I might have an entirely different plan, an entirely different path that we are going to go down in order to continue to achieve our objective. And you know, again, I'm speaking from an enemy's perspective, an opposition force's perspective. So if I'm on their team, I put my feet into their boots and I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, what might the scenarios that I might consider doing in order to disrupt the plans of this incoming Trump administration? We already know that they did it once. They're not about to just, you know, fall back on their heels or fall back on their laurels and say, okay, we roll over, we give. No. And, you know, there's been all kinds of talk about, you know, the unification, and I'm all for that. I want to unify this country, and I actually think that the majority of this country is actually unified and focused on the kinds of things that Trump has been talking about. That's why he won with such a huge, huge mandate. But there is still an element out there that is this opposition force, and they're in control of our government still, so we still have about 2.5 months to go. One of the things that I keep saying this, and I hate to even raise it again, but one of the challenges that we have as a nation right now, because they've already tried it twice on Trump, is for Trump to stay alive during this period of time, and then of course going into the White House. So Trump is going to have to really take a hard look at his own personal security. I think his family needs to take a hard look at their security. You know, the types of enemies that we are facing, some are overseas, some are internal, some may be even working together. You know, some of this is just speculation on my part, but we already know that there was two attempts on this man's life in the last 6 months. So this is not speculation without experience, right? So that's one aspect of something that I do firmly believe that Trump must be prepared for and must continue to you know, push his people that he has around him, not just the staff, but the security structure and the security forces that he has around him. It's really, really imperative that he does that.
And General, just interrupt briefly, because I know he listens to you, and he did, you know, got behind the bulletproof glass. He did get into more indoor areas. Now that we've won, and I understand he had to press the attack and roll the dice like he did. He has a lot of courage. I think he needs to now go into more of a bunker mentality, do a lot of digital media, a lot of press conferences, things like that, where he's protected, and then mainly be focusing on messaging and getting the transition team in and wargaming what the bad guys are going to do. And so I hope when you talk to him in person, you say, sir, I mean, your own words, how would you militarily describe him? I'm not saying go to a bunker, but now clearly he's in more danger than ever. And that's obviously the next move from the globalists. It's a no-brainer. Show poisoning, surface-to-air missiles, smuggling a bomb that looks like a battery, replacing it, you know, on some staffer's phone while they're in their hotel room. We could walk through all of that. What would your advice be to the president? Because this will get to it. In fact, give the president a few minutes, then get back to your points.
Yeah, so I think one of the things he has to do, I would never advise a bunker mentality. I think what he has to do is he's going to have to continue to expose himself to the, not just to the American people, but to the world, because he's got to show strength and he's got to continue to show strength, but it's got to be done very smartly and it's got to be done in ways that, you know, that it's like a commander who maneuvers on the battlefield. You know, he's always exposing himself to some level of risk. You can't, you know, you're never going to get completely away from that, but it's got to be done in a much different way. But my bigger advice is to really start to hone in on and let the American people know the actions that you are planning to take on day one. I'm not talking about, I don't want to know what your 100-day plan is. Okay. Some transition staff will give us a 100-day plan of all the things they want to accomplish. I mean, we are not going to have that much time going forward. So 4 years, it's really three because you go into another election cycle, all this stuff. So I want to know, and what I would advise is to tell the American people, here's what I plan on doing on day one. And I know one of those things that he's planning on doing on day one is immediately starting in on this deportation plan. That's, you know, that, I think that's first and foremost, because that's a promise that he made and a promise that I know he'll keep. You know, there's also some efforts, and this is where some of the advisors around him, like Elon, who will get in there, and I know Elon's going to be looking at a task force of sort of government efficiency. And, you know, everybody's saying, well, he's got to get rid of 80% of the government. I actually think that there's 100% of some of the aspects of the government need to be eliminated. But so I want Donald Trump to be focused and to start to talk to the American people about some expectations that they can see and they will feel on day one. And then all of those have to have some structure of a team behind them to continue to push that effort, whether it's to shut down the Department of Education, whether it's to completely revamp the Department of Justice, whether it's to do things like start looking at, you know, I want, if it were me, you know, advising him, I want a list of all commutations, all pardons, all dismissals that I want from things like the J6, right? I mean, because what we have learned about J6 as an example. So that's an example of things that I want. And those are things that I will execute, or I would advise him to execute on day one. So all of a sudden people begin to realize, okay, he's absolutely for real. He means what he says. And what this begins to do to the people that are still opposing him, and they will be opposing him when he gets into government, and these are people in government right now. And people I don't think realize, but the Washington, D.C. voting tabulation, I think it was 95 or 97% went for Harris. So that tells you everything you need to know about the opposing forces. So day one. And then I think Trump needs to, you know, come back to the American people and fairly soon and say, look, in the first 90 days, these are the top three priorities that I am going to achieve. And I mean, these are major, major tasks. You know, it's number one, and it should always be the safety and security of the American people. That's putting making America first. So what are the subordinate, you know, the subtasks to keeping the safety and security of the American people? You know, getting out of these damn wars overseas, taking any money that's supposed to be going overseas and stopping that nonsense and flowing it back into places that matter in this country. You know, that so that would be, you know, a big priority. A second priority is the continuation of this deportation campaign, because this is going to be a campaign and it's not going to be able to just happen on day one. But day one, we begin and then updates. You know, here's how we're going to do it. Here's the task force I'm putting together for that. The third thing that I think, and these are all kind of top priorities, and this gets to what I've been engaged with in some conversations with Bobby Kennedy and watching what Bobby Kennedy is talking about in some of his interviews, is this making America healthy again, right? This is a big, big deal. We've got to rip the pharmaceutical lobby out of the, like a cancer, just, we got to rip it out of the body of America and get control of the health system in this country. And I mean, like, right away. So this is where, you know, Bobby Kennedy, and I know he'll start right now and he'll bring together the right minds and they'll start looking at CDC, FDA, Health and Human Services, and all the other components of our health system and start to say, okay, we're going to eliminate these things. We are going to get rid of these impositions of, let's just say, vaccines that go back to, I think it's like 1987 or something. There's some rules that go back there. Then another area that needs to be looked at, and I mean right now, starting day one, and I know that there are some people looking at these, but every single regulation, Trump mentioned it last night, and he's mentioned it a couple of times, and I think this is a real big issue for our economic health in this country, and that's energy. And I'm a big proponent of all types of energy resources in this country. And I've told people that we have enough energy in the geology of the United States of America, and in particularly in the contiguous 48 states that we have, as well as the waters around us, we have enough energy capability and resources to take care of the rest of the world for the next 500 years minimum. So that energy resource, you know, and the capabilities that we have, there are so many regulations where people in places in this country can't even stick a shovel in the ground without going back and getting a federal mother may I. It's insane. So the elimination of regulations, and he ought to be telling the American people, here are the things that I'm going to eliminate. So come the moment, the second that I become president of the United States, all these regulations are going to be done. They're going to be gone. So, you know, you people down at the local level, you people down at the state level, you know, you can start to re-energize the kinds of business processes, the type of businesses that we can create in this country immediately, because energy is a commodity that the United States has in abundance, and that can bring wealth to so many other components, manufacturing, you know, just the whole innovation.
I mean, just to be clear, the globalists admit they're cutting off the energy to make us poor, to control us. It's Cloward, Bibble, and Sterling.
Absolutely.
So we just get out of the UN treaties. And just going back for a moment, Trump has talked about the 325,000 kids so far in the Senate report a few months ago that were brought in that Kamala didn't lose. They got rid of them on purpose. We've had the whistleblowers on that testified to Congress in the studio where they were being given three-month-old babies on planes with no diapers or formula, and then just giving them to people, in some cases with no paperwork, found in slave labor, found in sex slavery. Not just say, we're going to stop that. He needs to go after the NGOs. He needs to go after Mayorkas. He needs to go after Harris, and then say to the public, we're going to have a federal task force to find the missing children, which is the right thing to do. But then he uses that as the political support of the larger deportations and has at the center of that. And then that will, he has to then destroy the Democratic Party of the last 4 years that did this and ended the DNA testing to see if a kid was really with their family. I mean, this is the smoking gun, General Flynn, as you know.
Yeah.
And that's the way to first attack the Democratic Party with that, bring down Mayorkas, I mean criminal charges, after they go into this, get control of the Justice Department, fire all the U.S. attorneys, put his people in, and then directly, not target some little scandal here or there, go right into the human trafficking and the UN NGOs and these charities, instantly smoking gun info. We already have all the witnesses. And then that brings down the Democrats as the human smuggling pedophile party. That is my proposal. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. So these are, so when we say the deportation campaign will have, should have a series of phases and subtasks, right? And I mean, and not to overcomplicate this thing, but this idea about going after what you just described, which is, I think it's 350 or 400,000 missing children, right? Quote unquote missing. They know what happened to them. They put them into slave labor. We're talking about 2, 3, 4-year-old children, babies, right up to teenagers, but babies that are out there being sex slaved. This is sickening. And so this has got to be like sort of a first priority within this campaign, because that's part of what we as Americans should do. If we want to say we maintain the moral high ground, we should immediately go after this. You know, a component of all this is, of course, to go after these criminals that we know came in with the illegal invasion. The terrorists that we know that came in that are on the books right now of the FBI and the CIA and all these other agencies, and clearly under DHS, these people know this. And we have people inside the government right now, some of whom are whistleblowers who are ready to go to work for us. And there's others that I know that are in the government that have been crushed when they have risen their heads to talk about this kind of stuff.
And General, let's go back, because this is the key to everything in my view. And you just said it, so you're the expert. I know you know more than I do. That's why I want you to elaborate so we can get this done. As you said, go after the serious criminal gangs so the public sees it's the right thing to do and that Trump's protecting them. It legitimizes everything else he's doing that's the right thing to do. Go after the criminal gangs. Go after the terrorist. And that's the war right there that's real and unifying and right. People totally get behind him. Then the human trafficking at the same time, which goes right to the Democrats and the NGOs. And then that is the domino that's the right thing to do as well, that brings them all down. And so, I mean, that to me, this is the thing to hit, and also stopping World War III. Please continue.
Yeah, and because you've hit on NGOs a couple of times, and I think people need to understand that the NGOs, there's a lot of churches, a lot of faith-based organizations that are involved in this kind of stuff. So this has got to be one of these, I don't use the word ruthless, but there's got to be a ruthlessness to the campaign that this undertakes, because some of these NGOs are directly involved, and we know exactly who they are. Some of these are faith-based organizations that hide behind that, and we know exactly who they are. And I will tell you, I keep a list right here. I'll show you this right here. Okay, this is my enemy terrain, and many of them that are part of that. And I, this is something that I have been focused on for a long, long time. You know, you have a lot of different NGOs, and you know the Arabella Advisors, right? Arabella Advisors. I'm showing this on your show here because there is a scheme to the enemy terrain and to the enemy disposition on a battlefield. This is the disposition of our foes, right? And a lot of these, their ultimate goal is what I describe as global power and a weak America. Well, we just won a major victory last night, and that victory has to be sealed by us continuing to fight, like I say, through this objective. And on this map are a series of non-governmental organizations, a number of faith-based organizations that are directly involved in the illegal invasion that this country has been experiencing, even going back to Obama, but clearly during the last 3.5 years under the Biden-Harris administration. And I'm telling you, these exist. We know where they are. We know exactly how they operate. And we need to go after every single one of these and dismantle this formation. We have to dismantle a lot of this.
And then they organize the illegals to vote. I mean, it's all in that. And that's the UN plan they said 50 years ago. We'll use NGOs. We'll do reverse colonization with the third world and conquer the first world. This is replacement migration, General.
Yeah. And who funds a lot of this is I mentioned the Arabella Advisors. I mean, this is a George Soros construction, okay? A construction type of organization. And what they've done is they've created for-profit organizations, and then under them they have these nonprofit organizations, and then they have these non-governmental organizations that tie directly into the U.S. government and get grants. I mean, to the tune of millions and millions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer money to be able to go and do these kinds of tasks that
General,
we're talking about right now.
General, some of the NGOs get billions.
Yeah, they do, and some of them work directly for elements of the U.S. government, namely Department of Homeland Security. Some of them work for or underneath USAID. So these are things that I know. These are things that there are others like me that I know we can depend on, that we can go in there and systematically and structurally, because this is not just about building a wall and closing the border. We have this all over the country right now. And a lot of these NGOs, they not only operate like at Eagles Pass, Texas, but they also operate in St. Louis, Missouri, or they operate in Chicago, Illinois, or they operate in Boston, Massachusetts. These NGOs are spread and sprinkled all over the map to be able to function as like sort of enemy forces, if you will, on the battlefield of America. And what they're doing is they're ripping us off, and they're destroying the lives of, in many cases, children. And because when we're talking about initially, a year and a half ago, I think it was 90,000 was the number that was reported to Congress that were missing children. And then all of a sudden, like 6 months, 8 months later, that number jumped up to 350,000 when people inside who we know, they came out and they said, this is a lie. Our government's lying. DHS is lying. Mayorkas is lying. It's not 90,000, which is bad enough. One is terrible, but it's more like 350,000. So this is a big issue. Once we start to tackle this, and this is, so I think that not the entire battle plan that will be developed needs to be exposed to everybody, because we don't want, you know, we got to keep some of these people off, we got to keep them on their heels a bit. But we got to start talking to the American people about the types of things that we're going to need the American people's help with.
Oh, it's the right thing to do. It'll unify everybody, and it will bring them down. And they're involved at the top. It's the UN's always being caught in human trafficking. We can bring them all down with this. General Flynn, how do people find your incredible work, your books, your material, everything you do?
Yeah, they can go to flynnmovie.com, flynnmovie.com, and rent the movie or get the watch movie. It. It's $3.99. The other thing is on generalflynn.com, I put out a newsletter a couple of times a week, actually. I love to write and get my thoughts out there on stuff like we're talking about right now, generalflynn.com. And also on X, follow me at Jen Flynn, and I'll put my thoughts out there on a daily basis. And I really, really appreciate you, Alex, and everything that you've done for this country.
I appreciate you. It's history. It's happening. We have the beachhead. Now we've got to press the attack. God bless you, sir, and Godspeed. Thank you for your gracious time.
Thank you.
All right, Owen Schroyer takes over. I'll be doing special broadcasts. Follow InfoWars. Follow me at Real Alex Jones on X. We're going to win the war. God bless you all, and God bless President Trump. Obviously, silver's doing way better than gold in growth, and it's way undervalued. That's a fact. Why, then, are the central banks mainly hoarding gold?
Well, because there's simply not enough silver, right? It's like if you've got central banks that start allocating into silver, when it's $30 an ounce and they want to have it be part of their reserves, it's like, okay, there's not enough silver in the world to do that, right? So they have to do gold because it's $2,400 an ounce, not $30 an ounce, right? So this is why
they've
central
got so many quadrillions
gold.
Of fake money. There's not there's too much fiat to even buy the silver, which I would say then means silver still will always be the thing that grows the most.
Oh. So silver, historically, the numbers prove out that when gold is in a bull market, which it is, we're near all-time highs, silver does better than gold. So silver grows faster. And there's a reason why. Silver and gold both act as barometers to government distrust, right? It's the worse things get, the better financial metals do. They're a flight for safety. But what silver has that gold doesn't is it's a manufacturing metal. It's used in industry. So in aerospace, in defense, in electronics, in solar power, electric vehicles, all of that. The demand for silver is through the roof, Alex, and we're just taking advantage of that. And imagine what silver will do with Trump being president, somebody who actually grows the economy rather than having a stagnant economy, the industrial need for silver is absolutely going to explode.
Now, you're right. Silver is the closest thing to a silver bullet. That's why they call it a silver bullet. People should go to kpm.com/gold right now and get silver now. We'll be right back.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.